welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. With this episode, we are wrapping up our series of episodes with Texas Bankers Association leadership. And we'll have an interview today with Will Lucas, who is the elected vice chair of TBA. He'll serve as vice chair for 1 year and then take on the role of chair next year. It's been my honor to speak with TBA's immediate past chair, Jan Mills, and the current chair, Ron Butler, and now to have a conversation with Will Lucas. Will, welcome. I would like to start with a brief bio of Will's work, and then we're going to jump right into the conversation. Will Lucas joined Shelby Savings Bank as a loan officer in 1998 and was named president in 2012. He also had the honor of serving on the Texas Finance Commission from 2011 to 2024. Kelly and Will were married in the fall of 1992. Will earned his bachelor's degree in business from Stephen F. Austin State University in 1992, and Kelly and Will are proud grandparents to four grandchildren, with a fifth expected to arrive this June. Will, thank you for your time. On behalf of our listeners, I know we appreciate the time you're giving us today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Elizabeth. And hey, since that bio, number five did get here. Last Wednesday, the fifth grandchild got here. So we have five.
That's exciting. Is everyone happy and healthy and good?
Everybody's great. Everybody's great.
Oh, I love that. Well, congratulations, Grandpa. And I'm happy to hear that good news. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, I was going to start off with asking you to talk a little bit about your professional path in banking. And I know often professional and personal kind of coincides, especially when we are small town bankers and committed to our communities. Sometimes family and personal stuff intersects. So feel free to tell us about the grandkid. If we want to make this an episode about grandchildren, I'm good.
I could do a whole hour on that. So no
problem. Oh, I love that. To start off, can you tell us a bit about how you got into banking and maybe also the path that led you into Texas Bankers Association leadership?
Sure. Got into banking is an interesting story. I didn't start until I was 28. So the first several years right after college, like you had said, I got out of college in 92 and I worked with a family farm for about 6 years. My family farmed in the Rio Grande Valley. They farmed in East Texas. We primarily farmed watermelons and cattle and commercial poultry. Now, so we no longer do the watermelons, but we still do cattle and poultry. But in 1995, we had a really big drought in the Rio Grande Valley. They're having another one now. but I was going to have to take a year off. So I had some buddies that were in small finance, and so I had them help get me involved and get a license, and I started a small loan company in Cleburne, Texas. And I did that for about 2 years, really enjoyed that. Kelly and I moved up there, and in 1998, Shelby Savings Bank was financing my business out there, and they called and asked if I wanted to move home. So being born and raised from center, we were glad to come back home and take that opportunity. So it worked out really good. Came here as a loan officer, worked my way up into senior management. And I've been fortunate enough to, like you had said earlier, be president since 2012, and have really enjoyed the ride, but have seen so many changes over the years in banking. It's never dull, and definitely not dull right now in the environment we're in. There's always something going on in banking. So it is an amazing profession, and I'm proud to be part of it. What was the second part of that question?
I'd like to talk a little bit about how you've become involved with leadership through Texas Bankers Association as well.
Absolutely. So yes, our board has always been very heavily involved in Texas Bankers Association. John Snyder, my predecessor at the bank, was chairman of the TBA back in 2015. We've been very involved. If it's not attending all of the, the conventions, as well as the members of various committees and involved, I was also the chair of the foundation with Jocelyn. I'm trying to remember what year that was, probably maybe 2010. I was a chairman of the foundation somewhere around in there. So I've kind of evolved over the years and really always stayed involved with TBA. Been proud to be a part of that.
Something I love about state bankers associations, whether it's TBA or any bankers association, is that there's such a connection, not just to the bigger banks, but the smaller banks too. I got my start at a family-owned community bank, worked for a holding company for quite a while. And it's really special to me how state bankers associations, they might be based in the capital. It might feel far away from places that do a lot of ag lending out in the rural areas, but do such a good job of incorporating some of those voices that maybe aren't heard in the metro areas usually. Because you mentioned your background in ag lending, and that really touches close to my heart. My background is in Iowa banking, and ag is just huge, and it's the heartbeat of our communities. So I really appreciate not just TBA, but state banking in general that helps us stay connected with some of those rural areas where sometimes the Main Street bank is the heartbeat of the community. You mentioned banking is really in a lot of flux right now, not in such a bad way. In some ways, you know, we're looking at some positives. But TBA came out of a very busy year this past year with advocacy and work, not just promoting banks in Texas, but also work on the national front. And I would love to hear from you. What are some of the goals you envision for TBA's work this year and then going into the next year when you're preparing to take leadership overall? What are your thoughts and your goalposts that you're looking toward?
Oh, gosh. I think my goals will probably align with everyone's right now, knowing that we need to take advantage of the unique opportunity we have right now with having both the majority in the House and the Senate. And we have all this regulatory overreach that we're trying to get back in line so that we can better serve our customers and our communities. We really have, and TBA staff, I know these, you guys are fully aware of this, and they're doing a fantastic job of leading that momentum, leading that fight on the Capitol Hill, striking when the iron is hot. So that would definitely be my goal current and as far as next year, continuing that fight, really getting regulatory burden back in check and protecting the community banking charter. So, and as far as goals beyond that, gosh, I'd hope that one day things can calm down enough. I know they probably won't, but to be able to focus not just on regulatory overreach, but on developing new products for community banks and services, and trying to bring banks together to help share those costs and to really give an advantage to the small bank community charter. So that would be a big goal of mine for this next year. And I think we can do that. I think we can do both. But yeah, you know, TBA staff and you had talked about earlier about really having all those goals and having all those tools with the Texas Bankers Association available for us. We couldn't do it without the associations. And I was able to go to Central States to that convention and really meet a lot of the other state, administration, state, their version of Chris Furloughs, and really see that, you know, that we're not alone. There's a lot of amazing talent out there in all of these associations, and everyone working together and having that common goal. The associations are so important in that fight. So
I'm interested that you just talked about kind of shared shared programs, maybe shared services. That reminds me a little bit of the conversation we had with Jan Mills, where she talked about some of the fraud prevention steps that are being kind of spearheaded in Texas, but maybe also other states might be looking to either emulate that or they're working on similar measures. I would love to hear you talk a little bit about how small banks can be involved along with bigger banks in some of those mutual efforts. Fraud is such a headache and such a tragic situation for some banks and customers right now. And I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I think we've done a good job as far as this past year with the ICIS of really creating a whole new tool for us to be able to use and utilize that, but also on banks reaching across and talking with each other and trying to help each other and recognizing fraud and letting us all know what the current threat is. And that's a daily changing threat. I think we've done a really good job. I want to continue that. I really hope that we keep pushing that and continuing. I know we have more funding now coming from the state to really increase that department. And I'm excited to hear that other states are going to be having this as well. So, I mean, is something that we really got to push for, because fraud is definitely the number one threat to all of us now. And what is the next fraud going to be? Is stablecoin going to bring a new fraud? I mean, I'm sure it will. Every time you add a product, you add a risk for a new fraud. So we've seen that in every little bell and whistle that we've ever turned on at the bank. On internet banking, it was, when the person to person, when we added that, there was fraud involved. Linking external accounts, there's fraud in that. So now there's always going to be something that we have to be on the lookout for, and we need every bank helping and every tool at our in our tool belt to be able to fight it. So
you mentioned stablecoin just now, and I had a fascinating conversation with Chris Furlow when I had the honor of interviewing him as well. And he can speak so passionately on some of these topics, especially the current legislation regarding stablecoin. And I'm interested in if you have thoughts, opinions, advice on banks looking kind of down the road at crypto or stablecoin, that type of product.
Well, I definitely think that it's inevitable that some version of stablecoin or digital currency is coming our way. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be tomorrow, but in the next 10 years, I would think at a minimum, we're going to be having this in our as one of the products that we offer. What it's going to look like and how it's going to be used is what I cannot tell you. But I agree with Chris when he says that what we do need to do now is educate ourselves. Definitely, just constantly read and stay up on what it's looking like, what everyone is trying to do to utilize it. We've already seen some of the large cores email out that they're going to have availability for this soon. And so there's going to be banks that are at least going to have access to it fairly soon. Okay. And how are we going to control that? How are we going to utilize it? And then how are our customers going to need it? So there's so many questions in stablecoin. If you listen to anyone talk about stablecoin, you'll notice there's a whole lot more questions in their speech than there are answers. No one really seems to know, but we all do know that it's here. The Genius Act is already passed, and something's coming.
In terms of other products, you mentioned just that you're excited to look at potential development of other products. Are you the type who gets excited about changes to technology, or are you a little bit more like me where I just like the basics of banking, like helping people process their money, helping people get the loans they need to start their, the American dream, buy their first home? To me, some of those basics is what excites me, and it can feel overwhelming looking at some of the new developments. I'd love to hear your take and kind of your management style when it comes to that.
Well, I'm kind of both ways. I definitely love the traditional banking, but at the same time, every time we've had any new product come on, we have regretted being the last one to the table on adding it for our customers. Let's take deposit-capable ATMs, for example. There's really that. At first, we thought that was just the craziest idea, but now it is amazing how much the customers love those and what a convenience it is to them. There's just some products that you cannot wait on. You have to act on, even if you don't think they make sense. Stablecoin's a perfect one. I'm not sure it makes sense yet. I will honestly say that, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to try to stay educated and be ready. If it's some way our customers want to use it, I want to be able to offer it in a controlled environment. So manage the risk involved. So
that makes a lot of sense. I can only imagine that folks like you in those leadership and management positions trying to juggle some of those considerations, risk and a conservative approach and getting ahead of the industry are some topics that we talk through in my position. I work on our advisory hotline, and that it touches on some of those regulatory questions, but those are really questions that folks like you have to juggle with, and I'm grateful I don't have to every day. What guidance would you give to bankers when they really, I know so much of it has to do with your own bank, your own risk appetite, your own market, but what is some guidance you would give to bankers if they come up to you and say, how do we juggle these questions? How do we decide to adapt to a new technology sooner or later?
Here at our shop, we're a small shop, $430 million, mm-hmm. For example, on stablecoin. I'm pushing my senior management weekly in our weekly meetings, saying, have you read this? have you studied this? And are you keeping your ear to the ground on these products, on stablecoin? And so we can all stay educated and stay up to date on it. So that's what I would recommend to everyone. So even though you may not think that you'll ever use it, we need to learn about it. We need to stay ready and poised. We don't want to have the big banks and the large banks have that product and be out there and launching it, mm-hmm. and community banks be the last one to the table. So that'd be my advice for any product, not just stablecoin, but on any new technology. Just as hard as it is, like you said, as much as we want to be traditional bankers, we have to keep our competitive advantage out there, and we know who's going to have it first, and we just want to make sure that we're fast followers.
A theme I feel like I'm hearing from you, which is obviously throughout the industry as well, is stay educated, stay informed, stay alert. Something I love about TBA is there are so many opportunities for education, for learning, knowledge, growth. I would love to hear a little bit about your favorite resources, whether it's conferences, networking, educational materials. How do you stay up to date?
Oh, gosh. Like, for instance, on the lending side, every new loan officer goes to a lending school. They either go to the residential or the consumer lending school with TBA. Those are just such really good resources. I mean, because we definitely utilize those. I can't think of one school that we don't utilize. And we couldn't really exist without TBA as far as keeping us educated, and especially being in rural Texas. And, you know, we're not able to hire staff with a lot of experience in these departments. So we'll hire staff that really are great people and smart, and then we'll send them to school to teach them to be bankers. So that's a big thing that we use with TBA for. Favorite schools, right now my favorite is the forums. So we're involved in the CEO forum, the CFO forum, the Chief Lending Officer forum, and the CIO forum. So each one of us will go attend one of these forums, and we'll bring it back to the senior officers and the vice presidents of the bank and kind of share that information each quarter. And it's working really good. We really are enjoying that. As far as that, it also is, it's not just learning things about banking, but it's learning how others do things so that you might find a better way and a better mousetrap on just the processes of the bank. So.
Something that I hear from a lot of community banks and which I benefited from, and it sounds like maybe many moons ago you benefited from as well, is taking folks with a willingness to work and training them up to be bankers. I love how you just phrased that. I was hired in as an admin assistant and was very, very grateful to be put on the lending track, and then got into compliance, and I found my niche in compliance. How would you approach hiring, especially when you're in a smaller community? What is the approach you give to either your HR professionals or your department managers when they're looking for people who maybe don't have banking experience but could be trained up?
It is really just that. We have found it so much more to our advantage to hire someone that's not a banker, that is, you know, it's just a really good person and fits all the absolutes. We have certain absolutes, we call them. You know, they approach everyone with a smile. They have a good demeanor, and there's, you can tell they're driven and passionate about wanting to do something. And we'll take that person and teach them how to be a banker. It is harder, definitely, on certain specialized professionals. For accounting, you're going to want a CPA. For your chief information officer, he needs to have experience there. There are limits to that. But in a sales position, whether it be loans or in new accounts and all of those positions, it's really about the person. So we find the person, and then we train them for the job they're going to do. So I'm all for that, because it really matters on the person and who they are, more so than their experience.
Well, I obviously, like I said, I benefited from that. I was hired as an admin assistant. I thought, hey, cool, a bank, cool. And then I learned to absolutely just love banking. And some of us stumble into this career, and so grateful for people who took a chance on people like me. But I also know banks across the country benefit from, taking a chance on someone, like you said, if they have the qualities you're looking for. And then it seems to me like those TBA schools or other State Bankers Association schools, that's where they come in so, so vitally to help train up folks. In terms of TBA's work, both with those schools, but also in terms of outside of just Texas, I know that TBA works at the national level as well. Do you have anything of interest in terms of TBA's advocacy in Washington, D.C., but also across working with other State Bankers Associations? How does that work for you?
I love the idea. I love what they do every day working with all these other banks. And I really got to be a witness to a lot of that this past year as I traveled with Chris and see that, the day-to-day activities of the Texas Banker Association is not limited just Texas and the banks here. They all work together, all the associations working together for a common goal. I'm so excited about that. Like I said earlier, the more people you have involved, the stronger you're going to be. I'm very excited about that, and I'm very passionate about that. So I'd hope that we continue that and keep those relationships. Relationships is key in everything you're doing, not just in banking at home, but in Congress and in getting things done. So
that's something I appreciate, just because I work with Compliance Alliance, through Texas Bankers Association. And something that I just appreciate about Compliance Alliance so much is that we are able to provide resources to banks who can then keep their staff in-house, whether it's the virtual compliance officers or me, like I'm on the advisory hotline. Because employment within, especially small communities and small banks, it's very important to a lot of management to keep that employment local. And I benefited from that myself in a small rural town, being able to get a job at a bank. And then that's where I'm so honored that Compliance Alliance can help provide those services to keep the staff within the bank. What is the balance you would feel, like when do you feel you need to outsource versus when are you able to train up someone for the work they can do?
Gosh, I know we haven't, as far as our our documented succession plan, and that is in almost everyone to utilize all the products that TBA offers for that. So we definitely have that in the back of our mind. We know that's a resource that we can pull on, and we have comfort in that, and examiners like that as well. We do have to have a plan for what's going to happen. So I have no problem with utilizing any of it. So we haven't had to, but I know it's a growing industry for Compliance Alliance, and it's definitely getting more and more popular for all of us because of just, definitely our resources are limited on finding the specialized, chief information officer, probably the toughest one in rural Texas. I need the guy that wants to move here that we don't have a Starbucks. And it's just a little, we have a Dairy Queen, so you need to be comfortable with that. So that's a small pool of guys that I'm going to be able to pull from. Yep. So definitely it's important that we know that it's there.
What is some advice you would give to seasoned bankers? I was going to ask seasoned bankers or new bankers, but maybe if you're willing, you could split it into two answers. What is advice you would give to seasoned bankers right now in the current banking environment? And what is advice you would give to new bankers starting their careers?
Get involved and stay involved. And don't limit it just to your local communities. Getting involved in TBA, getting involved in ABA, getting involved in politics in your local, whether it be your local state congressman, state senator, or your senator or congressman for Washington. So really stay on top of that. And really, the more contacts you can make in that realm, the more utilized you will be, and you'll see that you'll be going forward. And now's the time to really get involved and stay more involved than ever, and don't be comfortable just because we have a majority in both the House and the Senate. Know that this is when we need to get things done. This is when we need to be pushing to set things right. Utilize the TBA resources, the CEO call that they have, the forums, the lending schools. Utilize all the tools that are there to help you grow. That would be my, to both new and old, to bankers coming in. But it's an exciting world. Stay involved.
I feel like a theme I've heard having had the pleasure of speaking to you and Ron Butler and Jan Mills and Chris Furlow, a huge theme I've heard is advocacy, but also education and relationships. And I love those themes because honestly, banking, it seems to me, is built on that kind of network of people working together to make our industry better. Obviously, we compete, you know, within banks, we compete with each other. But something that I just appreciate so much working across the industry is that banks really want each other to flourish. You know, we want an environment where everyone can get the best products and services they need within their communities. And that's something that I feel like I'm hearing as I'm talking with you is just a passion for serving people within your community. And that always just really excites me. Maybe we can end the conversation if you're willing to maybe share one or two anecdotes from your work and how that intersects with your community involvement and what's been kind of meaningful to you over your banking years so far.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think of a good anecdote at that, but staying involved and meeting people and knowing people really is so important in banking. And like you said, not just on the level of knowing customers and say you're a loan officer and you want to grow your book. I mean, definitely you have to stay involved. But whatever you are in a bank, the more relationships you can make, the better your career will be and the better your bank will be. So we do. We push everyone at the bank to be involved in something. So from the top to the bottom, everyone is to be involved in an organization and to volunteer their time at least 2 hours a year. It's not a lot, but we do for a documented getting out there, getting to know people and meet people. And it comes back to the bank. It really does. It comes back to the industry. So we have so many relationships that we've made like that. Nathaniel Moran, our state rep, I really got to know him well through all the banking organizations and meetings that we've had here. Robert Nichols, our state senator as well. So, and I've met all those guys through banking events and now have a relationship with them. So so it starts small and it will just build on it from there. So
that'd be my advice. I love that. Start small and it will build on from there. That's going to be my takeaway from this conversation. But well, Will, I feel like this time has flown by and it always does when I'm enjoying a conversation. But I appreciate your time so much. I am truly looking forward to benefiting from your leadership with Texas Bankers Association, seeing the work you're doing. I'm just my little me over here, but I get to watch the work that's being done. And I really, really appreciate the time you've given to me today. Anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
No, Elizabeth, I appreciate you and your team for what you guys do and putting this together. So thank you again for allowing me to take part in this podcast. This is my first podcast, by the way.
Hey, congratulations. You've done your first episode. I'm sure there'll be many more to come, but
all right. Well, thank you for that. And I look forward to this.
Will, thank you for your time. And on behalf of the podcast team, thank you everyone for tuning in. This has been another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup. And until later, goodbye.